Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Painting the Stream. My name is Dan Reichert. I am one of the hosts.
I'm Bianca. Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Hey, we can jump in whenever we want here. Yeah. Just two of us. There's not can't be that much crosstalk, right?
It's true.
Two folks. Two married folks. We got Dan over here. We got Bianca over there.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing, honey?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm also doing great. We got the dog on the bed. He seems to be comfy and quiet for now. And we're going to talk about a real, well, we won't say any value judgments yet, but we're going to talk about a real movie that we watched.
It is a real movie.
It is. It was released in movie theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to that in a second. First, we want to tell you about something. We are launching something for Painting the Stream. We usually handle all the kind of housekeeping stuff at the end of the episode, but we are launching something new that we wanted to tell you about here at the beginning here. You folks out there on the internet may have heard of Patreon. Surprise! We are launching a Patreon, but this is not going to be this big, large-scale thing. This is obviously not our full-time jobs or anything like that. We just wanted there to be an easy way for people to support the podcast. If you are listening to it and you would like to support it financially, we've got a really simple thing at paintingthestream.com, which will redirect to our Patreon. It's one $5 tier. If you want to support us at $5 a month, you will get the podcast every week ad-free. You'll get a private little RSS link to put into your podcast player, and you will get every episode of Painting the Stream without ads. Now, don't worry if you don't support us on Patreon. Absolutely nothing changes for you. This podcast will continue to go out to all the same podcast apps the exact same way as before. No changes at all. Also, if you support us, like we've done in the past, through the listener support program on Anchor, that doesn't change either. We still get your support. We've got a handful of people on there that have supported us. If you would rather go the Patreon route, feel free to switch your support over to Patreon. But also, if you want to stay and not create an account on Patreon, feel free to email us at paintingthestream@gmail.com, and I will respond with that same Patreon private RSS link, and we will go ahead and make sure that you're getting the ad-free episodes as well. So, figure this is a nice way to do it. You know, Patreon, that's a very, very popular website that people do this on.
Very user-friendly platform.
Very user-friendly. You know, we set it up and we kind of stealth-launched it a week or two ago. We got one sneaky patron already that must
have... We see you, Neil.
We see you, Neil. We got Bonkus coming for you. We saw your comment on the Snowman episode, so thank you for supporting us. And we look forward to, you know, if we happen to get some patrons and everything on the Patreon page, we might do some things in the future where maybe we'll have polls to determine the next show that we're going to watch or movie. We have not done the Patreon thing before, so we're just going to start out super duper simple. $5, ad-free episodes. Support us if you're enjoying the podcast. Or if you don't want to support financially, just listen like you've always listened.
Yes, please. Thank you for your support. We appreciate it. And we hope that this Patreon thing makes it a little easy for whoever wants to support us to do so.
Yes. And also, we've had the Bonkus in the past and the episodes for the listener support folks. That also comes with the $5 tier. You will get a Bonku not only sent to you in a message on Patreon, but it will be read on the air. We just want to make sure that you get a Bonku earlier so you don't have to wait in case there's a backlog of Bonkus. So you got the Bonku, you got the ad-free podcast, and you have our eternal thanks for supporting Painting the Stream.
Yeah, I'll go through all the people who are pending Bonkus and make sure they get theirs as well so they're not... You know, they don't have to suffer the delay.
Absolutely. Everyone's going to get their Bonkus, and everyone will get the podcast each and every week, patron or no. But you can sign up at paintingthestream.com or patreon.com/paintingthestream if you'd like to help us out on Patreon.
78 episodes. This is our 78th.
This
right?
is the 78th, not
that's a
counting.
Lot of episodes.
We did a couple bonus episodes, and that's not counting that. We are at 78 every single Sunday since we started in March of last year.
Yeah.
Every Sunday, 8 a.m., we have had an episode here for you, and we have no intentions of slowing down. There's a whole lot of stuff on Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime and YouTube and all sorts of other stuff. So I don't know. There's actually Shudder and all sorts of other ones too. We've got patrons and everything now that are interested. Maybe we could look into getting different services and things like that.
Yeah, isn't this like Disney platform, streaming platform launching at some point?
Yes,
soon?
The Disney Plus thing. We
yeah.
will have to look into that as well. So yeah, all sorts of fun things we could do in the future with Patreon and offerings and so forth for the patrons. But we just want to thank all of you for listening to the podcast.
You guys are the best.
You're the best. Thank you so much. We started a little mom and pop podcast here. We were sitting on the bed with a a microphone in between us. Those early episodes, not the best sound quality.
No.
But hell, I learned how to do a lot of this stuff. Hopefully it sounded better for you folks. We got a nice table here that we're sitting at. We're making an operation out of this thing.
Yeah, it's a whole thing now.
It is. And Bonk, thank you for joining me each week here on Painting the Stream. And to everyone listening at home, thank you very much for your support.
Shall we get down to it?
Let's get to it. Let's get to the fun. Oh, boy. We watched this week Blood Rain.
Blood Rain. Uwe Boll. Is that how you say his name?
I think it's Uwe. It looks like Uwe Boll, but I think it might be the weird Uwe. Werner thing where it's like certain European nationalities, maybe you pronounce the W like a V.
Yeah.
I feel like I've heard people say Uwe Boll.
Uwe Boll. That's probably right. I know like there's that song from that folk metal band. I think it's a Finnish band called Vodka, but they say it Wodka.
Wait, so do they say V's like W's and W's like V's?
I don't know how they say W's, but they say V's like W's. I don't know if they say W's like W's or W's like V. Why would they have the W if they say the V like the W? That would
well, Uwe or Uwe, that's definitely spelled with a W, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, maybe that's what they do. They reverse it, because Wodka, you're feeling stronger. You're feeling fine. Your eyes are shining. You are a real man. That's what the song goes like.
Oh, okay.
Everyone is gorgeous. Wodka!
This is a metal band?
Yeah, they're like a folk metal band. What the fuck is his name? I forgot the name.
Does Eric Rowan wear t-shirts of them?
I'm sure he has. Is it Korpiklaani? It might be Korpiklaani. And I'm sure he has worn a metal band. He wears a lot of folk and Viking metal band
t-shirts. In his wheelhouse?
Yeah.
Well, either way, we're confused about how the VEW situation is. We'll say Uwe Boll, and just with the asterisk that we might be wrong the entire episode.
Good call.
So normally, before we do something for Painting the Stream, I at least get a quick kind of cursory glance just to make sure something is at least like, oh, so bad it's good, or oh, it's really critically acclaimed. People love this new Netflix show or something. This one, I didn't even look at the Rotten Tomatoes or anything. I just saw Uwe Boll, and I knew it was Blood Rain. I feel like I'd heard enough people say it was bad.
Yeah.
Video game to movie adaptations are historically terrible.
Well, I haven't seen all of his movies. I know he does like mostly video game adaptations, but he's never had a movie that was like, oh, you know what, this one's actually good, right? All of his movies have been critically panned.
They're universally panned. Some of the other ones where he did House of the Dead and Alone in the Dark.
There's a House Postal of the Dead movie?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, by Uwe Boll. He did a Far Cry one,
there's
apparently.
There's a Postal movie?
Yeah, I've heard about the Postal one. The Postal one sounds terrible.
How is there enough there to make a movie?
I think it was just basically him trying to do, like, South Park humor, like, just making fun of everything, but I think he might be really bad at that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, did you play Blood Rain, the game?
Not a ton. In fact, I was just trying to remember if I did an old video back at Game Informer of it, and I looked it up, and sure enough, yeah, I played like the beginning of Blood Rain, but I didn't put a ton of time into it. Did you?
Yeah. I beat Blood Rain, Blood Rain 2.
Okay, on Xbox.
I think they're both on the Xbox.
Yeah.
I really liked them as a kid, but granted, I was like, was early 2000s, I would have been like between 10 to like 13, so prime age for sexy vampire third person action. But it was like it was just one of those games where like slicing people apart, it felt like they were really gushy and made of jelly, and you would jump on people and suck their blood to regain health, and you would make all weird sex noises while you did it, because I guess when you're a vampire or a damn fear and you're drinking blood, it makes you orgasm.
I mean, it seems like they're pretty into the blood.
It seems like whenever blood happens, there's a whole lot of bloodlust. And sometimes it's just plain lust, as we see in this movie.
The blood is the life.
That's true. Yes. Blood is life.
I know when you play video games, you've frequently liked playing as like kind of badass, like sexy ladies.
Of course, yeah.
And was that part of the draw of the game for you back then?
Yeah, I thought she was cool. You know, it was it was definitely a relic of the early 2000s, this version of like badass women, just like super duper sexy and stuff. Like, I remember in Blood Rain 2, you could unlock schoolgirl outfits and stuff like
that. Okay, so just really leaning into the like better aliveness.
I wasn't offended by any of that. I thought it was funny and kind of cool. Plus, I'm a sucker for any kind of game that'll let you change outfits.
I didn't know it had like unlockable costumes and stuff.
Yeah,
in it.
Well, I know the second one did. I don't remember if the first one did, but
you just finished Control, and I know you unlocked a few more outfits than I did.
Yeah, that game was fucking awesome.
Their
See,
games.
I think that game would make an awesome movie.
Oh, hell yeah. That'd be incredible.
It's
like
David
right.
Lynch should get on that script. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We both beat it, and definitely one of my favorite games of the year.
Oh, for sure.
And my favorite Remedy game, period. But back to this horseshit. So we got Uwe Boll and we got Kristanna Loken in the titular role of Blood Rain, or Rain, as she's named in this. It feels weird saying titular, but am I saying that right?
Is it like titular? I think it's titular, not titular.
Titular?
Titular.
Titular. So she is the titular, role of Rain, the Damphir, the half vampire, half human.
You've read Dracula. Is Damphir the accepted term for a half vampire, half human, or is that just concocted?
That word definitely never appears in Bram Stoker's Dracula. Nor, I don't think it comes up in Castlevania Symphony of the Night, where you literally play as a half human, half vampire Alucard.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it seems like half human, half vampires have all the advantages of being human. You can go out in the sun. Your face doesn't become all fucking weird.
No, didn't she have to get like three relics to like one of the relics protected her from sun, one protected her from water, one protected her from some other vampire
weakness?
Oh, maybe
you're right. Well, then the one notable difference then is that her face doesn't become all distorted when she wants to, goes into her blood rage thing.
That's right. Because there is a part where like a window breaks and light comes in and she kind of like rolls a blanket over her. So I guess it's just put a blanket over yourself and you're fine.
So I think we should start broadly at the setting, which is really confused me. It's unclear where this is taking place, and more importantly, what time period, because while Rain appears to be like a gothic kid that hangs out outside of Hot Topic circa like 2005, everyone else appears to be in like the medieval times.
Well, it's very confusing because I'd say for 95% of the movie, it does seem like people are in the like early 1800s or something.
Yeah.
It's a lot of castles and horseback and stuff like that. But then there are parts where it's like Michelle Rodriguez is in this movie, and there's a part where she's like by a lake and it looks like she's just wearing like comfort wear, and then she takes off her like pink jacket thing and is wearing like modern wetsuit looking stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of clothes that so Rain's outfit in the movie, it's not as provocative as it is in the video game, but it kind of evokes it a little bit. It's this like red and black getup. It's like a crop top with like these black, weirdly loose black pants.
Right.
Maybe it's just weird for me because I'm looking at it through 2019 eyes where pants are generally, you know, more fitted.
Right.
But yeah, it's whatever it is, it's at odds with what everyone else is wearing. And yet no one seems to bat an eye. As if her unnaturally red hair wasn't enough, she's wearing this very strange outfit. I mean, I feel like that would, you know, evoke some response from passersby, like, hey, what the hell is up with you?
Yeah, no one brings that up at all. And also in regards to her clothes, I never really noticed them much at any point until I think she's in jail or she's hanging out with the Midnight Society or what the hell is Brimstone kids or whatever.
Midnight Society.
And some dude brings her like a burlap sack and is like, oh, we've got some clothes for you.
Seamstress made this for you.
Yes, we hope they're to your liking. And, like, I don't know exactly what the character looks like, so I was thinking, like, oh, is this going to be the big reveal where it's, like, zip, zip, you know, suited up in her, like, iconic video game wear? But then, like, I never even noticed her changing clothes.
It's essentially just appears to be a leather version of the, I guess, like, canvas outfit material she had before. It's the same outfit, just like a leather version, which I think, you know, if a seamstress saw what Rain is wearing, maybe she would go out of her way to have something that offered more protection. Like, if it is leather, then, you know, maybe a full body leather thing, then it's the same exact outfit, but just a leather version of
it. Yeah, her belly button constantly exposed.
Yeah.
Never
I mean,
exposed.
There's ways to make armor super hot. Like, you don't have to sacrifice the hot. And plus, it's Kristanna Loken. Did you see her face? It's like, come on. There's no way you can make that. You could screw that up. So it didn't make any sense to me. And the other thing, too, I feel more iconic than her outfit from the video games are her weapons. She has these like arm-mounted blades
like
that can
tanfa things. Is that what they're called?
I don't know what they're called, but they can like retract. In the video game, at least, they're attached to her arms and they retract, and like they're kind of like they move pretty freely, and they're obviously super sharp. They're blades. In this movie, they're mounted on her back, which I get. It's probably really hard to like engineer that kind of weapon in real life, right? But it also just looks like a big butter knife, like two big butter knives, you know? All the weapons in this movie just look like butter knives. They're dull, rounded edges that are flimsy.
They all look like wobbly Renaissance fair replicas.
Yes,
and
totally.
Everybody in this movie looks like they're just wearing bad cosplay.
Absolutely. Every person in this film looks like they're wearing a costume and not, like, of the period. Like, especially Kagan, who has one of the worst wigs I've ever seen.
Oh, Kagan. Okay. Sir Ben Kingsley here, yeah. Which I have not followed his career extremely closely, but I always, growing up, thought he was revered as this excellent actor. I know he played Gandhi. I think he might have been up for an Oscar or won it or something, but he was always, like, one of our great actors, I feel, like, yeah. Growing up and hearing his name. And so to see him in this role... Which he doesn't have much to do outside of sitting in a chair and staring blankly forward in a cavernous
room.
That's
all he does is just sit and stare and occasionally like bite the neck of like a young lady.
Yeah. And also there were a couple shots where I never thought I'd say this, but Ben Kingsley kind of looks like Willie Nelson.
I could see
like,
it.
Just without a beard, you know?
Yeah.
But so he plays Rain's father because he raped her mother and killed her, and you know, the killing was in front of Rain.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously we've got the I need to storm and kill my father story going on here. And he's the one, he's trying to get these three pieces of some dead dude. It's like an eye, a heart, and like some bone or something.
Right.
And why does he want to get this?
I have no earthly idea. I think it has something to do with like making vampires really powerful so they could rule the land of man or some shit. And I guess for Rain and the Brimstone Society, these relics are a way for them to get in the castle. Because I guess it's easier to find these ancient mystical relics than it would be to just get into the castle, which seems to be just a plain castle. So they opt to do that, putting everyone at great risk by essentially offering themselves up on a silver platter to get into the thing. And, I mean, yeah, it was a pretty bad call. I feel like there are far better ways to do it. They could have shimmied in through a window or something instead of...
She seems pretty agile.
Yeah, instead of bringing these relics, these sought-after artifacts to Kagan, you know, doing all the work for him.
Yeah,
it seemed unwise.
There's the scene where she gets the first one. It's the eye, and she... Well, first of all, she storms this place, or she sneaks in. There's a stealth sequence here where she, like, under the cover of night, she does sneak into a castle. I think it's a different castle. But the dude that's walking around and spots her is Yuri from Command & Conquer Yuri's Revenge, and he's also the rich guy from the party in the first Ace Ventura. I've just seen him in a million things, and those are the two that I definitely remember him most from. But there's this, like, trap room, and I think they're trying to do, like, an Indiana Jones type thing.
Does she sneak in? Didn't she come to the door and was like, I need food and a place to rest because...
Is that how she got in?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think she snuck in.
I know that Yuri was like looking at her from like she's down in a courtyard trying to be all sneaky, and he's like, "Oh, what's she up to?"
I think he was observing her at some point, but I think she kind of just leisurely walked in, I need some food and a place to rest.
And she's sneaking around. She finds this like circular trap room. It definitely looks like some trap room from like a God of War or something. Where I guess if you step in there, all these crazy jigsaws fly out. And so she throws one of her tonfas in, I guess, to activate it. And so she already knows that, oh, that's what happens. The jigsaws come out. But then she throws another one in, which gets, like, knocked into the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't really know what she was accomplishing here.
I don't know either.
Other than just triggering it so she can maybe go afterwards.
I don't know.
Like a video game.
Something I want to mention before we get too far away from it is, like, the whole beginning sequence of this movie. She was an attraction at a carnival.
A sideshow. She's like a freak. Like, look at this. Oh, water burns her skin.
That's how the members of the Brimstone Society heard about her, because she was part of this attraction. So that's pretty weird, because you know it's not as if at some point in this movie she comes upon her powers. She's apparently always been this powerful damn fear lady. Like, how did she let herself get captured by a bunch of humans and be a show in a carnival and she's kept in a cage? And then at one point during the night, some guy comes and tries to rape her.
Yeah, and he comes in, like, drunk, and then he, like, bleeds on her, and she gets all like, oh, fuck yeah, blood, and then just starts, like, ripping his face off and everything.
And then kills, like, everyone in the village.
That's the thing. She goes on this, like, murderous rampage, which we see in a flashback, like, 2 seconds after she's shown having escaped somehow, which you could have just shown that sequentially, I think. But she's covered in blood, and we see all these, like, incredibly poorly directed flashbacks. Like, it's some of the worst, like, flashback direction I've ever seen in my life. But then right afterwards, she runs into this, like, covered wagon, and there's a bunch of, like, rival vampire ladies, and I guess they're trying to eat the covered wagon people.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so she tells, Rain tells the people in the wagon, like, hey, I will not harm you. I only wish to kill vampires.
Right.
Well, she's, like, basically still drenched in the blood of an entire circus full of people.
Yeah, I was curious about that, too. Like, how could she so easily forget about that? Those were all regular humans. Yeah, they were assholes, and the guy was trying to rape her, but, you know, I mean, that guy definitely deserved to die.
But she killed a lot of people.
She killed a lot, including she bit the neck of the one helpful friend that she had.
Yeah, the friend, this lady that comes up and she's literally saying, like, here, you should take my sword. She just turns around and bites her neck.
And this was like a half hour after she came to the side, the bars of Rain's prison cage and was like, take this necklace that is near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, just instantly bites her.
Yeah.
So when she first gets into town after all this stuff, kind of before she sneaks into the Yuri place, they start doing maybe my favorite thing of this movie, which is the bad CGI frowns, where it's like whenever a vampire like turns and looks at her, and it's like this really, really bad. I'm sure I can find some good GIFs of the turns, but like it's the most 2006 ass CG.
I'm thinking this was not long after Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I think Buffy might have just wrapped up, or maybe was in its final years or something. But those faces, those effects were very similar to the vampires that we'd see in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay.
Like that face, like when Angel would, I fucking love that show, when Angel or Spike or whatever, what their faces would change when they were in vampire mode. When Angel is Angelus.
Was David Boreanaz one of those? I know he was on one of those shows. Wasn't he one of the, like, I'm the vampire man, I'm the vampire hunter?
Is he Angel? I don't know.
Maybe he's Angel. He's this guy with a big forehead, and I always saw him in pictures. And it was always like Angel, Buffy, what were other shows of that era? It was Charmed. Charmed is a witch thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's like a lot of UPN shows. Shasta McNasty?
I don't know what that is.
Okay. I was advertised all the time on SmackDown and starred Jake Busey and Vern Troyer. Probably not a vampire show.
No. Yeah, I've never heard of that, but
we'll see if that's on Hulu. I'd love to do Shasta McNasty.
We should definitely check that out. Which,
by the way, this movie, we didn't say up top, but this is on Amazon Prime Video, as well as the two sequels. You can check those out. Also, real quick aside, Uwe Boll, also in 2011, made a scene-for-scene parody remake of his own Blood Rain 3, but it's called Blubberella. And it's about a large woman going to like fight the Nazis, and Uwe Boll plays Hitler in this. And it's literally scene-for-scene remake of Blood Rain 3.
Who is giving this guy money?
On his wiki, I was seeing a lot of stuff saying that like he was, by the end, having to finance his own stuff because nobody would, you know, cover his shit. This guy is a weird anomaly. I don't know
it's not like he's making these movies that are bad but hugely successful. Like this one, the budget was like $25 million and made $3.7 million.
So yeah, that's a massive flop by any metric there. Oh, boy. And also just there are, like, errors all over the place. Of like, I remember there was a shot. So she's hanging out of the ceiling when she's in the trap room, and she, like, absorbs the eye. So she gets, like, the first part of the three vampire.
Pretty convenient that instead of having to worry about holding it while she leaves this trap room, she can just mush it into her and just comes one with it.
Just in her head now. And sometimes it's a different color in the rest of the movie, and sometimes they just didn't bother. But at one point, they show a shot where she is falling off the ceiling and completely upside down, just ass over tea kettle, head facing the ground, feet towards the ceiling, and then it jump cuts with no time for her to turn around. We would have seen it, and she was just straight up landing on her feet, head up. Just that type of shit. And even when it's not straight up errors, it's just so poorly fucking made.
You know a movie is going to be good when, like, while they're making it, they're like, yeah, who cares? No one's going to watch this.
Yeah. Even with, like, a notable license and stuff like that.
And the cast, I mean, is pretty good.
We haven't even talked about fucking Michael Madsen is in this and Michelle Rodriguez.
Billy Zane.
Billy Zane's in it doing God knows what.
Meatloaf?
Yes. Oh, that's where we're at now is the meatloaf scene where Blood Rain gets knocked out at some point and she gets taken to Meatloaf in his, like, piano blood orgy.
Mm-hmm.
So Meatloaf's character is just this, like, he's got this big wig on, surrounded by naked women. He's this very just kind of debaucherous fucking whatever. I don't know if he is supposed to be a vampire based on where the scene goes, but I had no sense of who he was supposed to be.
Yeah, I don't know what his deal. I still have no idea what his deal was, except I think he's some kind of vampire.
Yeah, because he does. That's how he dies at the end of this scene. Is light. But it turns into this big fight thing. I think they just brought her to him being like, hey, you're horny. Here's another lady for your harem or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. They don't spend any time really explaining it.
You know, vampires who aren't like Dracula tier vampires, I feel like, yeah, they're threatening in the nighttime and stuff, but they're kind of fragile if you think about it. It's pretty easy. Just carry around some holy water and you'll burn them. A garlic is the thing that will ward them off. You know, a crucifix. You know, they're pretty easy to to avoid.
Well, and Dracula was hard to kill because he had this giant fucking like mansion on a hill.
Insanely powerful, and he was secluded.
Yeah, it was like impossible to. Yeah, he had a whole army of guys that would like attack any wagons that came up there. He had all sorts of protection. He had spooky ladies that showed up, and like Dracula's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah,
I like Dracula.
Man, Bram Stoker's Dracula, that movie's awesome.
Yes, yes. If you were just here on the podcast for the first time, go back a few episodes and check out Bram Stoker's Dracula. That's one of the more fun ones we've watched recently, I think. Love that one.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Also, Michael Madsen in this scene with Meatloaf, we learn has a, you know how like in Assassin's Creed, they have the wrist blades that come out?
Yeah.
He's got like a tiny wrist crossbow, and it's just like a fully functioning crossbow that he can shoot off of his wrists. And they have a fight with Meatloaf, who I guess is a vampire, and Michael Madsen has played Link to the Past, apparently, the fight against Blind in the Dark World, so he knows to knock the windows out, which brings the light in, which turns Meatloaf into CG dead vampire. No idea what that scene served at all.
Maybe it was just like, oh, well, we got Meatloaf, so we might as well use him somehow.
I mean, if Meatloaf wants to be in your movie, I mean, you can use him.
Yeah, I mean, if you and I were making a movie and Meatloaf wanted to be in it, I would say, absolutely, let's get Meatloaf in this film.
We will find a way to shoehorn Meatloaf into our film.
Yeah, but yes. I would think that the Blood Rain movie starring Ben Kingsley would maybe have a higher standard, but who knows?
Yeah. This is how bad this movie is. This movie has a training montage in the middle, and I don't care for it.
Yeah, and you're a sucker for training montages.
That is, even in the worst movies with training montages, I'm usually like, fuck yeah, we're slowly improving towards our goals.
Also, there wasn't a clear, like, oh, she was bad and now she's a lot better. Like, she seemed pretty competent beforehand.
Yeah, the very first thing in the movie, she just, like, rips through all those fucking dudes at the circus.
Yeah.
She seems awesome. She's got these blades and everything. She's not this, like, helpless, you know, sideshow.
So she's kind of traveling after she gets the eye and there's, like, the whole Meatloaf thing and the Brimstone Society comes and fights all the people there, and there's this whole thing, and they end up leaving successfully. She's traveling with the Brimstone Society now, and there's Sebastian, who has a horrible wig. And
Sebastian is, wait, that's Michael Madsen's buddy, right?
Yeah.
The, like Tom Brady with a bad wig?
Right. Michael Madsen plays Vladimir.
Right.
And then there's Michelle Rodriguez, who has the worst English accent? Is that what she's trying to do?
It's like Keanu Reeves level.
It's really bad. And also, inexplicably, she has these blue contacts on, which are like, she has really dark eyes, and the contacts are really dark. So it's just like, why?
It's like when they gave Roman Reigns blue contacts, because I think they thought it would make him get over with the crowd.
That's what he was missing. Yeah. Blue eyes.
Yes, that's the thing. Anywho, we go from the somehow bad training montage to a sex scene.
Okay. I just listened to an episode of Fresh Air where Terry Gross interviewed Maggie Gyllenhaal, who's on the show The Deuce, which is on HBO, and she plays a former prostitute turned porn director. And she was talking about how, you know, she's happy to use her body in the service of art, essentially. If it's a worthy project, if the story will benefit from her body, she will go naked.
Right.
I was, after, with that on my brain, I was so shocked that Christina Loken just agreed to showing her tits. Like, this movie does not deserve her tits. Like, why does she, what is she doing? And also, this whole sex scene was just out of nowhere. They had no sexual tension whatsoever. She wakes up in, like, a bloodlust rage. He needs blood. And then instead of, she goes to, like, bite his neck, but instead they just start making out.
That's the swerve. He thinks she's going to bite.
But the thing is, Dan, I was not thinking at all that they would have sex. There was no semblance of any kind of attraction between them.
I don't even remember a fucking conversation. I mean, I'm sure there was at some point, but there's definitely no, like, they lingered on them giving each other the eye for a second. Yeah. There's no hints whatsoever.
And it goes from that to topless boob exposed sex, which I feel like is in movies is reserved for people who are very passionate about one another. And it's like this weirdly, like, physically impossible kind of sex scene where, like,
the angles
was so, like, he was up against the bars. I was trying to figure out how this
works. It's like a jail cell. She's grabbing the cheap haunted house jail cell thing.
Yeah.
And she's propped up. She kind of crawls up
so
on him.
He is, like, against the bars and she is parallel to him. And her body is going up and down, but when it's from behind, you don't see her legs bent or anything. So it kind of looks like they're both just standing up straight, and she's just going up and down. Like, their genitals don't appear to be touching whatsoever.
And it's hard to tell, because I think, don't they shoot it from, like, a low angle with, like, a chair blocking the genital area?
Yeah.
So it's just very, very unclear what's going on
also,
here.
Not to dwell on this too long, but, like, Sebastian also licks her nipples. Like, pretty, it's, there's no way they could have CGI'd that.
No,
like, there was some
close,
nipple licking happening.
Straight up nipple licking, yeah.
Like, come on, save it for a better project. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it did feel just out of nowhere.
That being said, I understand the situation a lot of people are in with acting. It's hard to get roles and you want to just take whatever you can get. It's got to be hard out there. But come on, have a little respect. There's no reason why she needed to have her tits hang out like that.
I feel like I've seen her in two movies now. And while you don't straight up see all of her boobs in the other one I've seen, it's Terminator 3, there is the thing where I think
she's the Terminator?
The TX. Yeah, she's the TX. So there is the scene where I think she's trying to seduce a cop or something. And she does the thing where it just, like, cuts to her boobs and they, like, inflate.
Okay.
That's
what happens.
Well, it's future technology. You know, the TX Skynet had all sorts of
Cyberdyne. Yeah, you see it a little bit happening now, but that's the future.
Of course, yeah. So I've seen her in two movies now. Her boobs are very prominently featured in both. And now I feel like you'd never hear about her ever.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, never hear about her. But we do get a sword fight between, well, it's like a fencing training kind of jawjacking fight between Rain and Michelle Rodriguez here. And I remember this being especially awkward because since they're talking a lot during it, it's not like this high octane stunty thing where they're using, like, stunt actors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of, like, Christina Loken just doing a really awkward looking, like, roundhouse kick while she's talking.
Yeah.
And them just kind of slowly circling around each other and talking about their fathers.
Yeah. It wasn't too intense. You know what movie has a fucking awesome sword fight?
What's that?
Between two badass ladies.
Ooh, is it The Night Comes for Us? But that's just they're just hitting each other with everything and glass
and
everything.
Yeah, that movie is nothing but awesome fight scenes. But Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie.
Yeah, that's I did. I saw it in the theaters.
Yeah, there's a really long sword fight scene between the two lead actresses. I forget their names, but
I vaguely remember that.
It's really cool.
I'd like to go back to that sometime and check
it
out.
Yeah, I watched it not particularly recently, but, like, recently enough to remember how awesome it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely worth seeing again. I would watch it with you again.
Cool.
We should do that.
We'll see if it's on streaming.
Yeah, we should stream that and do a podcast on that.
If it's on something easily accessible, I would totally do that.
I feel like when that movie came out, that was pretty critically lauded, right?
It was, 99, and it was definitely, like, talked about in a way that, like, you know, definitely not foreign-made action films and in martial arts films and everything. Like, it definitely superseded that and got a very wide release for that genre. Because I remember seeing it in theaters, I think it was 99. And, people loved it. And a lot of wire work stuff that was really kind of top of its game and everything.
You know what's interesting? The more really bad stuff we watch, the more you start to be able to speak to why things are bad.
Yeah.
And it's a mix of, obviously, the terrible acting, terrible script, but it's just unnecessary parts. It's this an abundance of unnecessary things, quick cuts, and just, you know, scenes that are treated as, like, nothing is special whatsoever. Like, nothing is given weight at all.
And scenes and characters that just don't serve anything at all. It's just like, why do we do that? Why do we waste time with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is definitely one of the bad ones.
It sure is.
Yeah. Even something like, I'm trying to think recently, we've done stuff like Ghoulies. You know, Ghoulies is a corny-ass 80s movie.
Yes.
But, like, I didn't feel like it was, like, this feels incompetently made, Blood Rain. Ghoulies seems like a competently made schlocky campy
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, I feel
you
like
know?
Ghoulies, they did the best with what they had.
Yeah, that movie's fine, I think, you know? This one fucking sucks.
Yeah.
So they go from, like, half-friendly, half-rivally fake sword fight to pretty soon they have a fight underwater over a box with the heart in it. Mm. And it's turned out there that Katarin, Michelle Rodriguez, has, like, turned heel, basically.
Because her dad, Billy Zane, is a vampire. So I guess, is she Dampfear as well, or is she vampire, too?
And I don't,
it
Billy
was never
Zane wasn't
said.
A vampire, was he?
Yes, he was. That's why, like, she joined the Brimstone Society, and that was why their relationship was, like...
Okay.
And I think that's why she was looking for the relic, because she wanted her dad to overtake Kagan.
That's right, because he's part of, like, Kagan's ranks or something like that. Something and so like he's that. Trying to, like, sneakily get the stuff for himself. Yeah. Yeah, none of it matters. when they're underwater, Rain bites Katarin, and that's the end of Michelle Rodriguez down there underwater. And all of a sudden, everyone's in jail for some reason. Michael Madsen and Dopey Guy.
Well, they saw Rain when she went to give the heart to Kagan. The heart was taken from her, and then she was thrown in jail. And they were like, well, there's only one way in. Through jail.
Oh, so they purposely get arrested.
Right.
And then they escape in the dumbest ass way ever, where it's just like, they're both in the same cell, and Michael Madsen is like, hey, guard, the other guy, I don't know where he went. Mm. And the guy just, without looking up for 2 seconds, opens up the jail cell and walks in, and the other guy just like falls from the ceiling onto him, and they escape with no problem at all.
Yeah. That's one of my like least favorite tropes that happens in video games. You're in a cell, and it looks like there's no way out, and then... there is a way out.
I am usually with you on that, but one of my favorite moments in the first Metal Gear Solid is when you're in the jail cell.
Well, there are some exceptions. Obviously, the whole opening for Oblivion is that.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. I just thought the first Metal Gear was so clever when, like, Johnny Sasaki just keeps running to the bathroom to poop his pants, and you have these windows where you can, like, call Otacon, and Otacon will bring you, like, ketchup, and you can just, like, smear it around and lay in it, and it looks like you're bloody, and then the guard comes in, and you can knock him out and leave. Yeah. Or you can, like, hide under the bed, and he'll be like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, it's, I love that shit so much. Weird. Brought up Metal Gear. So Blood Rain is they want to have a ceremony, I think, to get the thing out of her eye, because I think that's the last thing Kagan needs is the eye or whatever. So they start like strapping her to a table and all this stuff while Madsen and his buddy escape from jail. Spoiler, both of those dopes die. They both just get stabbed, basically.
Yeah, their lives were rather inconsequential.
Yeah.
At least in the span of this movie.
Yeah. And we've got Ben Kingsley here burning the most calories he burned on set the whole time, which is just slowly walking in a circle.
Well, we were watching it like halfway through the movie, or like 75% of the way through the movie. I was just like, all this guy does is just sit.
And
like,
stare
that's
forward.
All he's doing.
Yeah.
Like, at least Dracula and Bram Stoker's Dracula was like getting legal papers signed, like documents signed, and like, you know, moving dirt so he can live by a cemetery. You like, know what I mean? Like doing logistical stuff.
Extremely boring stuff, but at least it's something. Dracula's like an old man, but he's keeping himself occupied.
Look, life isn't always glamorous. You know what I mean?
No.
But Ben Kingsley is just doing a lot of sitting with this terrible fucking wig, which I didn't comment on while we were watching it because I thought it was going to be like one of those, you know, how like old timey judges would wear
or
wigs.
Like old like George Washington types and stuff.
Yeah. I thought it was like that, but then I realized like no, they're trying to make that appear to be his actual hair.
I mean, when you look at the costume and weapon budget, like the prop budget here, I think the most expensive thing in this movie was like renting the horses.
Oh yeah, those poor horses. I hope they were treated okay.
I'm ashamed for Ben Kingsley and other good actors for being in this, but also this is so bad I feel shame for the horses being in this.
You know what, Dan? This movie made me appreciate the craftsmanship that goes into really well-made weapons for movies.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've taken that for granted previously because the weapons in this movie look like Halloween costume grade weapons.
You know what the first one that comes to mind when you say a really good weapon in a movie?
What's that?
Remember that fucking like demon axe thing that Nicolas Cage forges in Mandy?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. That one's fucking sweet.
That movie's great.
The more I think about Mandy, the more I'm like, man, that movie did some cool shit.
Yeah.
Like, we should sometime watch that again.
Yeah.
What a fucking tone that movie's got.
That was really cool.
Yes. But then there's very boring sword fight, and then it ends with Kagan. Kingsley seems like he's on top of Rain, and he's about to kill her. But then Dopey Guy, in his dying breaths, he throws holy water at Ben Kingsley, who catches it, and then Dopey Guy shoots a crossbow at it, and it shatters, and like distracts Ben Kingsley enough for him. Like he shoots another crossbow, and Blood Rain grabs it out of the air and stabs him through the heart.
Something like that. I think Ben Kingsley grabbed the arrow midair, and then, like, he was going to kill, like, stab it in her eye, and then she, like,
right.
found the strength. She had a vision of her mom getting killed, and then she found the strength to
That's right.
push it back. And then the movie ends, Dan, in the same room. The movie ends 10 seconds after that,
mm-hmm.
with Rain just sitting in the throne. Yeah. I don't know what that implies.
She is the one who gets to sit and stare forward now.
You know what a far more interesting movie would have been?
What's that?
We get these flashbacks to Rain's mother, who was raped by Kagan, get killed by him, right?
Yeah.
Right before Rain's eyes. A far more interesting movie, and frankly, I have a lot of questions about this, would be to a movie that tracks how she escaped from Kagan initially and then joined the carnival.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if he's, like, mercilessly killing the mom...
That's true.
Why didn't he kill Rain? How did Rain get away? And how did she find the carnival?
In theory, I understand why you say that would be a more interesting film.
Yeah.
But also, that would involve... seeing Blood Rain by Uwe Boll and be like, you know what I need? I need some more elaboration on how we got here.
I just have questions, I guess.
Yes. Are they worth answering?
No.
Okay.
Definitively no.
So we're not going to fund this film?
No.
Okay. This is one of the worst ones we've watched, right?
Yeah.
This is in the Hall of Fame. What's the Hall of Fame? What's the short list?
Well, there's Battlefield Earth.
Battlefield Earth is terrible.
Hellvader, I mean, that's a show.
That was a show. So, like, just straight up films. You know, Miami Connection is clearly badly made, but it's, like, an enjoyable...
It has so much heart.
It's trying.
Connection is oozing heart.
Yeah. So, I'd say, yeah, Battlefield Earth and this are definitely on the short list. I'm struggling to
We've watched some really bad movies.
Oh, actually, I know one that's worse.
What?
Love on a Leash.
Love on a Leash is, Love on a Leash is bad.
Honestly, if this is your first one, Panning the Stream listening to, go back to Love on a Leash. It is, I say this with zero hyperbole, it is the worst movie I've ever seen.
It's The Room caliber bad.
It's much worse. I think it makes The Room look very competent.
Yeah, it's a low budget movie. I mean, if we give consideration to budget, I don't know if it's the worst movie I've seen.
I'm saying Bell to Bell, that is the worst fucking
movie. It's really bad.
I think the whole movie is on YouTube, and it's also somehow on Amazon Prime Video. As we've done this podcast, I've really wondered about what the curation process
there is. No
Amazon
curation.
Prime
it's
Video
like Steam
is.
There. They'll take all comers.
But they also have, like, really good, like, top-level, big-budget movies and stuff on Amazon Prime, but then they have shit like Love on a Leash.
I suspect it's one of those things where they just, like, buy a lot of, like... Like a lot, as in like a group of...
Right, like a company that...
Like, yeah,
hey,
like
you
we'll
want
buy all the things you produced, and that includes all the shit.
Boy. Well, we've...
Well, the thing is that Amazon, because of that, is like kind of a treasure trove. Like, there's so, like, if you look something up on Amazon Prime, you'll get what you're looking for, and then you'll also get a bunch of, like, weirdly similar stuff that's not what you're looking for, but things you're kind of curious about.
I've actually found their recommendation stuff to be the most helpful when doing this podcast, because, like, you know, we do Ghoulies or something, and then we'll see, like, customers who watch this also watch, and since there's such a just vast variety of stuff on Amazon, like, I'll just scroll through that and be like, oh, boy, there seems like there's a lot of stuff we could do here. But that's it
that
for Blood
is...
Rain.
We suffered through it.
We suffer through these movies. We make it through the good ones, too. We got some good stuff lined up that we're looking forward to watching.
Yes.
But like we said at the beginning, I won't give you the whole pitch since you got that at the beginning, but if you want to support us on Patreon, you can go to paintingthestream.com or just search for us
that
on Patreon.
That sounds so cool.
Yeah.
Support us on Patreon.
Yeah, and I feel like I don't have to explain it as much. As,
right.
You know, I love Anchor, and their listener support feature has been great, and thank you to everyone who's helped there. But I feel like I have to explain that more, and I don't think people have, like, the accounts already set up and stuff like that. So,
yeah, you know, we wouldn't even consider doing the Patreon if it wasn't for the people who supported us through the listener support program. So it's not like we're abandoning you guys. You're still... open to continue supporting us that way.
Yep.
Or you can, if it's easier for you, move on over to Patreon.
And no matter what, you're getting the bonkus. If you happen to be on listener support, feel free to email us at paintingthestream@gmail.com and we'll get you that RSS feed for the ad-free episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Also use that email address if you want to give us any suggestions or recommendations or anything of the like. I'd also suggest if you want to know what we're watching the upcoming weekend, if you want to watch it for yourself, you can follow us at PanTheStream on Twitter.
Right.
And I think that's about it for this
week.
Well,
I do have a bonku, my friend.
Oh, geez. Good Lord, we're sitting here telling people they're going to get their bonkus. You got to give them the bonku.
That's
Who do
right.
we got?
This week, we will be celebrating the great Denzel.
Denzel.
Denzel, I imagine he's a quality person. He clearly has great taste in podcasts.
Yes.
Maybe he's a fan of you. Maybe he was just looking for a podcast that discussed, I don't know, My Hero Academia or one of our other more popular series that we covered. Whatever brought you to us, Denzel, I'm so grateful that you're here. And I'd like to celebrate you, take a moment to acknowledge you by sharing with you this banku that I wrote.
Let's have it.
The arid land shook and a crack began to form. From it rose Denzel.
That's really good, honey.
Thanks, babe.
You know, honey, if we get an influx of Patreon subscribers, are you ready to stretch those haiku muscles? Banku muscles?
Well, yeah. I mean, the way I see it, there's a range. There's like little... The way I've been approaching it lately is to try to like make up some kind of character in my mind for these people. And in this case, obviously, Denzel is some kind of godlike figure who rises up from the core of the earth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, a little of your heart goes into every banku.
Yeah, I try. You know, I really appreciate the people that support us. And, you know, it's the least I can do, so.
Well, you're a saint, Bonk. Razor, you're a real good boy.
He was such a good boy, he's going to get treats.
You're definitely getting a treat this
time. Oh, yeah, look at him. He's excited.
Yes. And thank you all, supporters or listeners. If it's your first time, if you listen to every one of them, thank you so much for supporting this podcast. Mm-hmm. It's been so cool continuing to do this over 78 episodes now for each and every one of you. And we're just getting started. So thank you all. Thanks to Tom Monda for the theme song.
Thanks, Tom Monda. If you like Thank You Scientist, Tom Monda, my other brother Dan Monda, who's the drummer for the Tea Club, they're going on tour together, guys. Nationwide tour. It's fucking awesome for me as the token Monda sister to have these two Monda boys together on tour. It's pretty fucking cool.
Absolutely. Congrats to the Monda boys.
Yeah, if you like prog, check that out.
Cool. Bonk, thank you each and every week for joining me. Thanks to you all for listening, and we will see you next week on Painting the Stream.
Bye.